Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verse 1. I thought in my heart, come now, I will test you with pleasure to find out what is good. But that also proved to be meaningless. Laughter, I said, is foolish. And what does pleasure accomplish? I tried cheering myself with wine and embracing folly, my mind still guiding me with wisdom. I wanted to see what was worthwhile for men to do under heaven during the few days of their lives. I undertook great projects. I built houses for myself and planted vineyards. I made gardens and parks and planted all kinds of fruit trees in them. I made reservoirs to water the groves of flourishing trees. I bought male and female slaves and had other slaves who were born in my house. I also owned more herds and flocks than anyone in Jerusalem before me. I amassed silver and gold for myself, and the treasure of kings and provinces. I acquired men and women singers, and a harem as well, the delights of the heart of man. I became greater by far than anyone in Jerusalem before me. In all this, my wisdom stayed with me. I denied myself nothing my eyes desired. I refused my heart no pleasure. My heart took delight in all my work, and this was the reward of all my labor. Yet when I surveyed all that my hands had done and what I had toiled to achieve, everything was meaningless, a chasing after the wind. Nothing was gained under the sun. When I read that over, there's two thoughts that come to mind, two conclusions that can be very different. There's the one side that says, it's like life is hopeless. There's nothing to be found of any lasting joy in life. This is a very pessimistic kind of a view. On the other hand, I can read it and I can say, well, I'm glad he tested a lot of these things out. Now I don't have to. You know, he sorted some things out already for us. And that can be maybe a good thing. We looked on Wednesday night through verses 1 through 9 and made some comments on that. We're just thinking back a little bit on the comments here that Solomon has left for us. All of the things that he tried. A man never before who had such ability and resources to do and to try the things that he did. He tried it all. I mean, he didn't leave anything out. And yet through all of this, as he would say, his mind was with him. He kept wisdom about him. There's on one hand a part of me that says, well, if he was so smart, why did he have to try all of this? But that's not really the point. On the other hand, was he tried all these things and had the wisdom in the end to say, you know, it really wasn't worthwhile. I mean, this isn't where real happiness comes from. He tried pleasure. And again, you try to think of it in this way. There was no one before or after him who had the resources to buy pleasure, if you will, in whatever way, in whatever form it could be found. He did it all. And when it was all done, it was like not so pleasurable. It went away, and then what was left after that? He tried laughter. I mean, we all, I think, enjoy laughter and seeing things, doing things that bring us that type of joy. We like to laugh, and you know, whether we go to a show or watch something on TV that brings us joy in that way, but pretty soon it's over. And then what do you have? And I think that's what he came to realize with that too. I mean, whether it was food, whether it was good wine, whether it was incredibly elegant houses, whatever he could do, he did it. And when it was all done, it was still empty. Left him empty, that is. Servants, possessions. Our writer in our book makes an interesting point. It's like, you know, sometimes people, they collect stamps or they collect baseball cards or something. You have a collection of something that you're proud of. Let me show you my cards. You know, we find some joy in that. Solomon had a collection, too, of like silver and gold. I mean, this was a period of time, as we would find in 1 Kings, a period of time where wealth was just incredible in Jerusalem. I mean, no one ever had more than what Solomon had. It's like gold was like stones. It was just, it's hard to imagine that. He had it all. But that didn't bring lasting pleasure. It wasn't in wealth. And so all of these different things that Solomon talks about here, we can relate in some way to all of them. Either it's something we experience or it's something we says, I'd like one of those. Or I'd like more money. And yet, if we could learn anything from Solomon, maybe it's this. As we go through these first few verses right there, whatever he had, in the end, it didn't really bring fulfillment. It didn't really bring joy. There's some powerful lessons to be learned right there. What are your thoughts? What are your comments with that? No, I think it's a really good question. What do you think about that? I mean, where is that balance? I mean, it's like Solomon did it all. He tried it all. In the end, he said it was just vanity. It's all meaningless.
So shall I give up in the beginning?
Yeah.
Because he's already done all of this.
Because it's not going to be worthwhile in the long run anyway. Why go through the bother? Why work so hard? Yeah. Reasonable questions. Hey, right.
Well, a couple of thoughts. Not that I have this all figured out, but a couple of thoughts. You know, we're also told whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might. And it says as you work unto the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the keys is recognizing when you do all that, those things in themselves are not going to bring us any true purpose or meaning in this life.
And there seems to be some enjoyment just in the process of the work, too.
The trick there is to identify what's going to satisfy you.
Mm-hmm.
You have those who sit down for a meal and they eat what they need.
Mm-hmm.
That's the right thing to satisfy.
Mm-hmm.
And you have those who sit down and eat and stop eating when they're hungry.
Mm-hmm.
They're not trying to fill themselves, they're trying to alleviate hunger.
And can be satisfied. Mm-hmm.
Trying to fill, like I said, you know, last week, the senses you don't fill, you address them, but there's always room for more. And if that's your idea of satisfaction, then you're going to be disappointed. He said, he enjoyed the building.
Yeah.
And his satisfaction was, okay, well, I did. If that was enough to satisfy him.
There was something about the process that was enjoyable, where he could say, like in verse 10, my heart took delight in all my work, and this was the reward of all of my labor.
So there was a reward. And it wasn't worthless, but he didn't reach the level of satisfaction that he thought would be.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't
the gold and silver that made satisfaction. It wasn't the elegant houses that provided the satisfaction. But there is something about working on a project and being able to stand back and say, boy, I'm glad that's done. You know, I'm proud of the accomplishment of the work, you know, so to speak, that kind of a thing. Well, that's true, too. It was to that extreme. Of course, that was part of the test of life, I guess, you know, for him. Do you know, one of the richest people I've ever known, J.W. Austin, is this old farmer that lived about 5 miles from us, a member of the church. And when I moved to Tennessee, like 100 years ago, you know, and I was looking for a place to hunt, and some folks said, you should talk to Brother Austin. And I did. And it just turned into a very fast and long relationship. And I would go to hunt on his place on Saturday, and I'd get tired of hunting, and I'd go sit at his house and talk to him longer than I spent in the woods. And we just had a great time spending some time together. And I say he was rich. I mean, he lived in a house like none of us live in. Not fancy. The other way. It was just an old shack of a house that he was raised in. You know, it was like three rooms to the house. It needed a good cleaning. He was a bachelor. He was a lifelong bachelor. Never learned housework real well. And from a monetary standpoint, other than 440 acres, I don't know what he owned other than he enjoyed collecting coins. And if he had riches of monetary way, I really don't know what it was other than 440 acres and 50 head of cattle. But there was never anyone that I've known who was more satisfied in life and who was more satisfied in his relationship with the Lord. When we would talk, I mean, so much of our discussion was about spiritual things. I never saw him open a Bible. He just quoted it. And it was just a very interesting experience. I learned a lot from J.W. Austin. He never finished school. I don't know to what grade level he did go to school, but I don't know to what grade level he finished. So in the eyes of many, he was not an educated man, but he was a genius to me. In so many ways, I thought he had life figured out. I mean, he was satisfied. And he didn't have to do all of the things that Solomon did to reach the same conclusions that Solomon reached. And so I look at the first part of Ecclesiastes chapter 2, and I see the opposite extreme of Solomon in J.W. Austin. And I see a man who was satisfied in life and a man who understood all there is in life is vanity. You know, this is not what it's about. This is not where it's at. Just my thoughts on that. Yeah. He had the test. He did the test. And it's recorded for us for a reason. Right. Sure. The challenge for us, though, is what Les brought up. How do we find that balance? How do we find that point of where having some ambition in life, trying to do and accomplish some things that are good in life, as compared to going overboard and doing too much, where maybe even our focus on the Lord is skewed because we're so wrapped up in this life? That is a difficult balance to find. Very true. Jesus would teach a real important lesson about that. Right. Most who have done or tried to do anything like what Solomon has done, do everything to the 1,000th percent and go way out, most have lost their focus in life. Solomon, as it will say several times in the text, but I kept my wisdom. He was able to go through all of this, and when he was done, he could step back and say, well, that really wasn't worth the exercise. You know, vanity of vanities. Most cannot keep their wisdom going through something like that. We lose our focus, we lose our direction along the way, and we don't end up where we thought we would end up. Daryl. Right. That's right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. In our society, that is so hard to do, and we all get caught up in that. We really do, because how many times I've said in the last few years, I like to simplify life. I haven't got that worked out yet. And every time I've said that, somebody else says, you know, I've been trying to do that too. Tell me how you do it. You know, we struggle in that. We really do. Dave.
You know, in Acts 2, all the brethren took their resources and combined them together.
Caring for the needy saints.
So, having ambition somehow, Lord gives them. So, when you share it with each other, you get more accomplished.
There can be blessings and benefits that come from that kind of ambition. Yeah, you're right. Ken.
They were wrong. It seems to me that Solomon from the very beginning was all on the wrong foot because he was just concerned about satisfying himself.
Yeah. They're very true. I mean, when you look at every one of those points that he makes in those first few verses, it's all very self-centered. I mean, it really is. And isn't that our problem sometimes? We become very self-centered.
Back to lessons for a question. I can't remember where it is, but I remember reading a proverb that talks about the father should lay up for the son. And so I don't think it's wrong for us to want to leave our children if we can.
Build greater.
You know, and he was very satisfied with his situation in mind. And the Lord said, this knife of your soul will be required of you. If we're storing up stuff and hoarding up stuff for ourselves, that's wrong. But if the Lord blesses us and we
can use it well.
And we're wise to what God's given us, and we use that to help others.
There's blessings in that.
There's no sin or shame in doing well and working hard and reaping the benefits of your labor. But just remember that everything you have, God has given it to you.
He expects you to use it wisely. That's it. It's very hard to make just a black and white kind of answer to what Les has proposed to us here. You know, where is that point? Where is that middle ground? Where does ambition get to the point where it's too far and we've become self-centered or we lose our focus? And I would suppose that it's probably a different point for different folks. I mean, I've known some who monetarily didn't have a lot of wealth, and yet they wanted it. You know, and that's all they worked for. That's all they planned for, was trying to accumulate more. And so having wealth was not the issue. Wanting that became an ambition that was a problem. That's right. The love of money is the root of all evil. You know. On the other hand, I have known some who have had considerable wealth who didn't particularly live as though they did and were very generous in what they had. They never lost sight of their relationship with God and what was most important. So, you know, to find that middle ground, that's a challenge for any of us, I'm sure. Rick.
I was thinking of where our author of the work started out the workbook. He said, talked about a college professor. Said, what is the one thing that everybody wants? And the answer in the class was more. And we've got to get to the point where that's not what we want.
Yeah. Yeah. And it took Solomon a lifetime to figure that out, really. Good thought. Yeah, Vince.
And when we talk about balance in life, and it always opens up the door for me to say, you know, where is your spiritual life? Because in the end, my song tells us, all is going to be vanity. So I try to focus that more. The reason why you're not satisfied and you get a new car every year or a faster car or things of that nature, physical things, is because there's a void in your life. And I don't know, like I said, all the details of why they have low self-esteem. It seems to me like
Right. This is an interesting point. I mean, think about having a void in your life. Can you imagine how could Solomon have a void in his life? I mean, he was the son of King David. I mean, he grew up as royalty. I mean, you would think there'd be a lot of fulfillment. He knew he was going to become king, then he becomes king. How could there be a void in his life where he's looking at all of these other things? And yeah, I think what Vince is saying here is very true in the lives of so many. People are, we're always looking for something. We're always often looking for the wrong things. And this is what Solomon's saying here. He tried all of these things, and it didn't really bring him great pleasure. You know, in the end, it was still empty. In the end, it was still vanity of vanities. There was still a void. It takes him a lifetime to get to the conclusions we read of in chapter 12, where it finally really sunk in, where he finally understood what was most important in life. Right.
And going back to the last, to me, that is the word you use when I'm in heaven, where you find the balance.
Mm-hmm.
If Christ isn't our balance to begin with,
we'll never find it.
We'll never find it.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be a collector and want more and more and more.
Mm-hmm. And never find true happiness. Look at verse 12 again. Verse 10. I denied myself nothing my eyes desired. I refused my heart no pleasure. My heart took delight in all my work, and this was the reward of my labor. Yet when I surveyed all that my hands had done and what I had toiled to achieve, everything was meaningless, chasing after the wind. Nothing was gained under the sun. And the only thing that he mentions here as being satisfying is being able to stand back and take some delight in his work. Here's some things I've accomplished. But even that was shallow, meaningless. Let's read on a little bit more, verse 12. Then I turned my thoughts to consider wisdom and also madness and folly. What more can the king's successor do than what has already been done? I saw that wisdom is better than folly, just as light is better than darkness. The wise man has eyes in his head, while the fool walks in the darkness. But I came to realize that the same fate overtakes them both. Then I thought in my heart, the fate of the fool will overtake me also. What then do I gain by being wise? And I said in my heart, this too is meaningless, for the wise man, like the fool, will not be long remembered. In days to come, both will be forgotten. Like the fool, the wise man too must die. The comparison here basically just being that of the wise man and the fool. You know, is it better being the wise man or being the fool? You know, where do you want to be on this? You know, so now he's kind of put off now all of these other just pleasurable type things that he's tried. He's tried it all. So he sent back, he's saying, well, what about wisdom? Maybe that's where real happiness can be found, is just in wisdom. Education, we might say. Okay, education can be good. But have you known some that just become so caught up in education that just becomes their life? And it's kind of like what he's saying, I think he said before in the first chapter. I mean, you can, no matter how smart you become, no matter how many degrees you have, there's still others who have more degrees than you or have different degrees than you. I mean, it's endless. You can just keep going to school, and you still haven't learned it all. So what's he saying here about wisdom? What's the point? Should we prefer to be the fool? What's he saying?
Mm-hmm. But if you just look at it just from an earthly perspective.
Yeah, this is under the sun. We're looking at things under the sun.
Under the sun, whether you're wise or whether you're a fool.
Still going to die. Yeah. So it's almost like he's saying, what advantage is there to being wise? You're still going to die. How would you respond to that? Or how does Solomon respond to that?
Well, there's some advantage to being wise, but you can kind of see where you're going.
Yeah. You have eyes in your head, he says. That's better than walking into a wall. You know, but whether you're not wise and you're walking in darkness and you walk into a wall, or you're wise and you know how to get out the door, in the end, you're still going to die. But I think the idea is I would rather be wise enough to see where I'm going, you know. But in the end, it's still going to be the same. I don't think he's saying there's anything wrong with being wise. But at the same time, you have to temper that by saying just seeking earthly wisdom is not going to be the answer of life either. Yeah. That's right. You can spend a lifetime going to school and then die. And who's going to know and who's going to remember and who's going to even care? And what difference is that going to make? I mean, the ultimate conclusion that we come to, you know, is that if we're living our life without God, it really doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how wise we are or how foolish we are, how rich or how poor we are. Ultimately, that's not going to matter. But it's better to be wise.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The vessel that we keep missing about here on purpose, I think, is that the vessel is life.
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to fill your life with?
Right.
You can't fit.
Yeah.
But filling it with the right things.
Right things.
But if all we're doing is trying to fill our senses,
we're still going to be empty.
Yeah, it's never going to happen.
Yeah, we're never going to be filled up. Yeah, good thoughts. Okay? Let's look a little bit farther on this. Verse 17. So I hated life, because the work that was done under the sun was grievous to me. All of it is meaningless, a chasing after the wind. I hated all the things I had toiled for under the sun, because I must leave them to the one who comes after me. And who knows whether he will be a wise man or a fool? Yet he will have control over all the work into which I have poured my effort and skill under the sun. This too is meaningless. So my heart began to despair over all my toilsome labor under the sun. For a man may do his work with wisdom and knowledge and skill, and then he must leave all he owns to someone who has not worked for it. This too is meaningless and a great misfortune. What does a man get for all the toil and anxious striving with which he labors under the sun? All his days, his work, his pain and grief, even at night, his mind does not rest. This too is meaningless. What do you make of that? I mean, he's talking about here all this work he's done, and in the end, he says there's been some things gained, but he says, just going to leave it to someone else. Doesn't matter how wise one may be, you know, how well someone, or how hard someone has worked, what knowledge has been put into play, how much skill one has developed and used, when it's all done, you're going to die. And what you're leaving, you may be leaving to someone who's a fool, is basically what he's saying. You ever see that happen? Someone who has some means, and they leave an inheritance to their children who are not wise, and it's gone. Yeah, we've all seen that probably. You know, and I've heard say, man, if his daddy knew what he'd done with that money, he'd be rolling in his grave. I've heard that said too. You know, what someone has worked a lifetime for and acquired is squandered in just a short time by a fool. You know, all of this too is meaningless.
That shouldn't be the focus of the psalmist.
Because he's still going to die. You know, and it's true. I mean, on the other hand, I have seen some who are so concerned about what they're going to do with what they're leaving, you know, that becomes the focus of their life too. It's still missing the point. Hand here. That's right.
If I leave them $10 billion and I didn't leave them that, I left them nothing.
That's right. Absolutely. Solomon comes to the point of understanding the real value of life. It takes him a lifetime to work it out. Sometimes we don't even figure it out. Many don't. Other thoughts? It's amazing to me how wealth in this life can get our minds skewed one way or another. Several years ago, I knew a brother who had considerable means, and his health situation had become quite poor. He had some real health problems, and quite frankly, we all thought he was going to die. And I remember visiting with him in the hospital, and he was going to have a surgery the next day that may or may not be successful. He may die in the surgery. And just he and I were talking for a little while. And he was just kind of reflecting over life. And even the fact that, I mean, he had worked hard, had accumulated some wealth because of hard work and being wise financially, I guess you would say. And yet in the end, I mean, he was being very serious and just saying, you know, in the big picture of life, it doesn't really matter. You know, talking about some wealth. And how we had got into this, we were talking cattle. He had cattle as well. I had a few head of cattle. He had herds of cattle. Big difference. And he was talking about making this decision about buying this $25,000 bull. This was several years ago. It'd be much more than that now. This was a very expensive bull, you know. And this was part of his point, how he'd labored over this decision, you know, on doing this, because it was a lot of money. But it was going to make him a lot of money in the long run because of this prize breeding stock that he had. And this was part of where he was coming to the point that, you know, if I die, it just really doesn't matter. I've labored over decisions about doing this. I mean, he went through several things, and he said, you know, it doesn't matter if your relationship is not right with the Lord, he says, when you die, and just, there's just nothing in life that really matters about those things. It was a very serious, it was a conversation I was glad we were having, because I really thought he needed some better focus in life. And I thought, well, it finally came through, you know, and he finally got the point, and it was a very good conversation, ended well. His surgery went well, and he was humbled through it all. And yet in time, as his strength increased, and he was busy about business and everything again, he was right back where he was, and his focus had changed again. A very astute businessman, but not very strong in the Lord. The Lord gave him his chance. He was nigh upon death, and he was seeing the picture, and he understood, and as far as I could tell, had made some adjustments in his attitude and life with the Lord. I don't know that he'll get that opportunity again. I think it was the idea here that all of these aspects of life that he had tried and experimented with, you know, it didn't mean anything. I think that was the idea of what he was saying. I hate life. I hate all these things because those things didn't make happiness for him. And we would be the same way. Quickly, let's look on here the next couple of verses here or so. Verse 24. A man can do nothing better than to eat and drink and find satisfaction in his work. This too, I see, is from the hand of God. For without him, who can eat or find enjoyment? To the man who pleases him, God gives wisdom and knowledge and happiness. But to the sinner, he gives the task of gathering and storing up wealth to hand it over to the one who pleases God. This too is meaningless, a chasing after the wind. Here's some insight, kind of a conclusion to some of the thoughts of the things he has just said right here. You know, this insight. You know, a man can do nothing better than to eat and drink and find satisfaction in his work. Again, it's not the point or idea not to work hard. It's not the idea that there's nothing to toil for in this life. But our satisfaction needs to be in what we do with our hands. Well, we can find some sense of accomplishment. We talked about that from another point on Wednesday night, that when we have a project before us and we plan for it and we work, there's some excitement in that. And when we get done, we can find some satisfaction in that. But that is not the sum total of life. I think Solomon is seeing that here too, that there is something in this. Here's what we can find satisfaction in, but this is it. You know, this too will vanish away. This too will go away. You know, to the man who pleases God, God gives wisdom, knowledge, and happiness. You know, he is fully convinced that God blesses those who are truly focused on doing what's good and what's right. And I do believe that. You know, that God sees those who are his. And an interesting point here, it's as though the sinner God uses for gathering up and storing up wealth, because that's what the sinner does, because that's his focus. You know, which Solomon is saying, you know, eventually that's just going to be handed over to the one who pleases God anyway. Kind of an interesting thought. God still knows those who are his. But in the end, all of it, this is just meaningless. A chasing after the wind. We talked about that some the other day. It's an interesting thought in my mind. Sometimes he says a grasping for the wind, or a reaching, a chasing after the wind. It's like you can't get anything with that. Well, like we said, go ahead, reach out there, get your hand full of wind. Tell me how that works for you. You know, there's nothing. All of this is just chasing after the wind. And so there's still no final conclusion. That doesn't come for 10 more chapters. But it's the same kind of point being made over and over again. Just chasing after the wind. Our time's gone, but go ahead. You got a quick comment, Denny?
As a college professor, I've had an opportunity to discuss these things with many of college professors. And the more degrees they have, the more important they are, the more they misunderstand God.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so simple.
Yeah. Wise in their own eyes.
There is no God. But if they would just step back and accept God,
yeah.
Everything falls in place so easily.
Sure.
But they can't see it.
Yeah. Wise in their own eyes.
We've talked about this in many of them.
Sure.
They can't grasp that it reads so simple.
Yeah. Yeah. Too wise to see what is simple. Good thoughts today. Good comments. I appreciate so much your good comments. Lord willing, we're moving into chapter 3 on Wednesday night. Read that over. spend a little time. Just read that text over two or three times, and there's some points in the book that'll be helpful for us as far as making some discussion conversation. Thank you for being here this morning. If you can, let's move up to the front. Let's fill the front up.